I've been given a task this evening by Alan. He says I can have 20 to 25 minutes. And I will do my very best to meet that, Alan. But if I don't make it, will you forgive me? Thank you. When I thought about this lesson, it took me back quite a ways in time to a time when I guess I'd only been married for a couple of years, and one of the two people that was probably most instrumental in my life presented the lesson that I'm going to attempt to present to you tonight. And it really didn't strike me nearly as hard as it has now that I have reached the point that's being talked about in this lesson. And I think as we look at this lesson, we're going to see that there are two very distinct categories. Those that are and those that are not. And in this lesson, I think the key is this word, or these words, before it is too late. Before it is too late. And that takes us back to this book of Ecclesiastes, which really deals with a very simple question of life. And yet, I think he deals with it in a way that most of us don't often think about. These wisdom books, and there's several of them in the Old Testament, had a very prominent place in the life of the nation of Israel. As each feast came up, whether it was Passover to Tabernacles, one of the books within this scroll became the highlight at this particular time. The Song of Solomon during Passover, Lamentations when they thought about the fall of Jerusalem, and Ecclesiastes when the discussion or the Feast of Tabernacle or Booths came up. And within this book, this relatively short book of 12 chapters, I find at least five sermons. The first of these deals with the fact that all of life is emptiness. Remember, over and over again, the preacher says, vanity. All is vanity. And that's really, it's emptiness. There's just nothing there. All of life is empty, but man ought to enjoy goodness. Why? Because it is from God. And then his second sermon is that there is profit in seeing God as the giver of all the seasons of life. Remember that whole section? There's a time and a place for everything. And he goes through this list of a season for or a time for. And then there's a third sermon. Instead of being fearful, enjoy life while it lasts because it is a gift of God. And the fourth sermon is man sees life as a struggle, but God gives life to be enjoyed. And then the final sermon in verses or chapters 10 and 12 is because of the emptiness of this life, man ought to fear the Lord and follow His word. In many ways, the book of Ecclesiastes is Solomon's diary. And it's really a book of emptiness. He tries so many things, and yet it's all vanity, emptiness. Solomon's search for satisfaction comes about in many, many different ways. He looked for wisdom in chapter 1, verses 12 through 18, acquiring more and more knowledge. And the outcome of that was much grief and increased sorrow, 1 and verse 18. And then he says, okay, let's look for pleasure. laughter and mirth. And the outcome of that was vanity. Chapter 2 and verse 1. And says, okay, those didn't work. Let's look at my accomplishments. I had all of these projects I built. What did Solomon build? He built a temple to the Lord. And he built a house for himself that was even more glorious and grander. He had agricultural projects and engineering experiments. But once again, vanity, emptiness, he says in chapter 2, verse 11. And possessions. Doesn't that hit us? Possessions in chapter 2, 17 through chapter 2, 7 through 17. He had servants and cattle and silver and gold, 1 Kings 10. Choruses and orchestras. And probably his biggest downfall were his 700 wives, 1 Kings 11 and verse 3. And out of all of that, there was no prophet, he said, under the sun, chapter 2 and verse 11. It was really a hateful of life, 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 17. So some of the lessons that I think that we can gain from the seasons of life, that life is a gift of God. To everything, there's a season, there's a time and a place. This is a call to live purposely. And we're called to enjoy the journey. And part of this enjoyment, I think, is found in this one another principles. And let me see if I can explain that to you. In chapter 4, verses 9, 10, 11, and 12, the preacher gives us four reasons why it's better not to be alone. He says two are better than one because they have good results in their labor. They can pick up one another's trouble. They can warm one another in the cold. And they can hold up one another in adversity, in work, in falling, in cold, and in adversity. Two is better than one. And he also lays out for us what I call the principles of propriety. That is, what is the order that we ought to be doing things in? And we see this over in the latter part of chapter 11 and the beginning of chapter 12. He says, rejoice. Rejoice in young manhood. Young womanhood. And then he goes on to say, remove vexation from your heart and pain from your body. And finally, he says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. He's really saying to us, to the young people, to those of us that are, I don't know, below 40, below 30, wherever you want to put it, rejoice in the fact that you're young. Take advantage of the fact that you're young. Get rid of this vexation that you find in your heart and pain from your body, and remember your Creator in the days of your youth. And then he points out, do all of this before it's too late. And this is when it really begins to hit home for some of us, like me and Mo and Bill. It begins to hit home. Remember before it's too late. And if we look, remember the Lord while you're young, because youth is brief. You don't believe it right now. I'm sitting here looking at you young folks. You don't believe that youth is brief and fading, but it is. And secondly, you're called to utilize the days of your youth in the very best possible way that you can, because maybe that's all there ever will be. And those habits that you form as a youth are going to be very, very helpful in the days of old. They'll help us see through the days of our old age, because I'll tell you, bad times are coming. Evil times are coming with old age. The brevity of youth is rejoice. Know that God will bring you to judgment. Rejoice in your youth. Enjoy it. But understand that God will bring you to judgment. Remove those vexations from your heart and put away pain from your body. Childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. They're only here for a short period of time. And remember the Creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come. Remember the Lord before old age comes. Remember Him before it is too late, while you're still alive. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, beginning in verse 1 through verse 5, reads as follows. And let's just turn and read that. For some reason, this is not the right PowerPoint, but that's okay. Verses 1 through 5. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come and the years draw near, when you say, I have no pleasure in them, while the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return from the rain, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men bow down, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the windows grow dim, when the doors are shut in the street and the sound of grinding is low, when one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of music are brought low, also they are fearful of heights and of terrors in the way, when the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper is a burden and desires fail, for man goes to his eternal home and the mourners go about the street. Makes no sense to you young people, does it? None of this is going to happen to you. But just look around at the older folks that you come into contact with, and you're going to see much of this reflected in them. In us, I should say. And what I tried to do is just to break this down with the Bible allegory and a possible meaning. The sun, the light, the moon, and the stars are not dark. Clouds return after the rain. It's really picturing those dark days that are ahead of us. The keeper of the house trembles. The strong man, his arms and his hands begin to shake. Whether it's due to palsy or Parkinson's disease or some other effect, the trembling in the hands and the shaking begins to take place. Strong men are bent. We're no longer straight and upright like you young people are, but we begin to bend over and our knees tremble and shake. Grinders cease, for they are few. This is well before the days of dental hygiene, when teeth rotted quickly and they were lost, and so one loses their ability to chew food. Those looking out through the window are dimmed. I remember, and I think most of you remember, right around the time you hit 40, you had to start pushing things out. And as you get older, your distant vision goes. And once again, we live in a wonderful modern society where we have glasses that can help us through this. Doors are shut in the street. Have you ever seen an old man or an old woman that didn't have dentures and their lips are kind of caved in? The sound of grinding is low. No teeth. So we're not going to eat the corn or the hard bread. One rises up at the voice of a bird. We don't hear as well, but it's amazing how the slightest sound will wake us up in the middle of the night. And then we go on, that all the daughters of music are brought low. And I think this has a reference to the fact that that beautiful, youthful voice that we had is no longer there. We don't have the strength to sing as we did in the days when we were young. And they are afraid of what is high, and terror shall be in their way. It's amazing how as we grow older, those paths that we were so confident in walking in, we now take our time and walk so much more slowly. The almond tree blossoms. Some of us turn gray. Others lose what little hair we had. The grasshopper drags itself along. That's that gait. Have you seen the older person? And I'm finding myself doing this more and more. We just take, almost shuffle our feet as we move along for fear of falling. Because that's the worst thing that can happen to us as old people, is to fall and break a hip. Because again, we don't heal as we did when we were young. And the caperberry fails to bear fruit. And this was a very classical aphrodisiac in this time. And even that didn't help with the desires and the lust that were there as a youthful person. And then finally it says, man goes to his eternal home while his mourners go about in the street, literally talking about death. The point of all of this, he's saying, is remember your youth. Take advantage of it. Develop those habits that are going to make you strong when you grow old and those days of evil and suffering begin to come about. And then over in verses 6 through 7, and let's just read those, verses 6 through 7, it's really a finalization, I think, is coming about. He reminds you again, remember your Creator before certain things happen. And I think each of these is a signal of death. Before the silver cord is loosened, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher scatters at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and so on. And what I see here is the idea of the silver, not gold, that other precious metal, silver, I'll get it out in a minute, is broken. That is, that relationship between the spinal cord and the brain is just not functioning properly. And that's going to cause death. The golden bowl is crushed. I think it has reference to the brain losing its function. We know about Alzheimer's and dementia. And, you know, there are three things that happen as you grow old. The first of those is you begin to lose your memory, and for the life of me, I can't remember the other two. And the pitcher by the well is scattered. That is, our heart stops beating. And the wheel at the cistern is crushed. The circulatory system begins to go haywire. We begin to deposit fatty deposits in our coronary arteries and our carotid arteries. These people didn't have the marvelous surgery we have today, coronary bypass surgery or carotid arteries, where they'll clean out the plaque that forms. These were sure signs of death in that day. And again, the point is, remember while you are still alive, particularly in your youth. And he summarizes this all by saying, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity, in verse 8. And then we begin in verse 9, and it says, moreover, because the preacher was wise, he taught the people knowledge. Yes, he pondered and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright, words of truth. The words of the wise are like gourds, and the words of scholars are like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. The idea, I think, here is in James 2 and 26, the body without the spirit is dead. And he talks about the fact that the body was originally created from the dust of the earth, taking us all the way back to Genesis, and it's going to go back to the earth. Whereas the spirit again from Genesis, was originally created by God who breathed in life, and the Spirit will go back to God. But in this, I think that what we're seeing is he's calling us to worship God while we still have life. Remember the Lord, because vanity of vanities, all is vanity. He's going to point out three things to us: that we're not getting any younger, God has designed you to be empty without him, and now in your youth is the time to prepare for eternity. Well, the preacher uses these three things kind of in a redundant, repetitive fashion for emphasis. The idea that you're not getting any younger. If your life is not cut short, then you will eventually face the prospect of old age. If you get through that youthful period and that middle life, you're going to face old age. You're on a journey, and the description of this chapter tells you about the eventual destination. And you know what that eventual destination is? It's death. You might be like the guy that jumped off the Empire State Building and they heard him as he passed the 50th floor saying, "So far, so good." But there is going to be an eventual end. And life is the same way. There is an eventual end to this life. And secondly, God has designed you to be empty without him. There's an emptiness that exists without God. Augustine said that thou hast made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. I think we could paraphrase his words to say that God has made us really with an empty space within which only he can fill it. The preacher concludes that life without God is not only empty, it's hollow. It's just vanity. There's nothing there. We've seen the oft-repeated message of the emptiness of life throughout Ecclesiastes. And you need to know this is not mere happenstance. I think it was designed to be that way in order to drive you to that which fills life with meaning and purpose, and that's God. And then he says, now is the time to prepare for eternity. In your youth, you need to begin to prepare. It's a good thing to prepare for retirement. This is wise stewardship of what God has given us. But that is at best only short-term planning. Truly long-term planning takes the eternal view in mind. And if we don't have an eternal perspective, then we're being very, very short-sighted in our outlook on life. Well, let's ask ourselves a question as we begin to come to the end of chapter 12. Can you follow directions? Two classical statements. If I can't put it together, the last resort is what? To read the directions. And heaven help us if I'm going to stop and ask for directions. We just, particularly as men, will not take the time to read directions or ask for directions. Throughout Ecclesiastes, I think we've been provided with some directions for life. We find in this chapter 12, some wise directions, and they are to fear the Lord and to follow him in our youth. Chapter 12 starts out, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. Throughout, we followed the preacher in his quest for meaning and purpose to life. He's tried all sorts of experiences and attitudes. And after looking at all of these, he said, they're vanity, they're emptiness. He taught the people knowledge. Look at verse 9 of chapter 12. And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he taught the people knowledge. Yes, he pondered and sought out and set in order many proverbs. He taught knowledge, but he also taught people. Let me try to illustrate that with a little story. There was this preacher who before every sermon prayed to God. Before his sermon, and then he gave his sermon. And this little girl asked her mother, "Mommy, why does the preacher pray before his sermon?" And she replied to her young daughter, "He's asking God to help him preach a good sermon." And the little girl said, "Mommy, why doesn't God answer his prayer?" You need to understand to whom you're talking to. It's not just the knowledge that Solomon is talking about, but being able to teach people these things. And we find that the preacher pondered and sought and arranged many proverbs. He labored at what he did. He worked hard to try to understand these things that he experienced to help us. And I think that's one of the hardest things for young people to understand is that the old man and the old lady have experienced a lot of these things as you're going through, and they can help you work through them if you'll just listen to them. Just as the preacher pondered and searched and arranged many proverbs, mom and dad have thought about and been exposed to many of these things and can give good advice. And he sought to find delightful words. And I think that's so very important for us to not just ponder and search and teach, but say it in the right way. And then he sought to write words of truth, not just words of truth, but words of truth correctly. Being realistic, but truthful in his view of life. Well, what are some of the values of wisdom's correction? And in verse 11, we find he talks about the words of the wise are like gourds, and the words of scholars like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. And it seems to me that the words of the wise are like gourds, as it says, and the master of these collections are well-driven nails. Both are given by one shepherd, that is, the God in heaven. Gourds, it seems to me, not seems to me, gourds are these pointed sticks that shepherds used to drive their animals, to make them move in the direction that they wanted them to go in. And it was kind of a temporary thing. And it represents the words of the wise, whereas nails have a different use. They're hammered in to keep something in place, much, much more permanent. And it represents those who learn the lessons from the words of the wise. It's the prodding to get us to go in the right direction based on the words of the wise. But when we really have them nailed into our system, we understand that which these words are trying to tell us. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 12 says, "The word of God is living and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." And then in verse 12, he begins to wrap it all up and he says, "But beyond this, my son, be warned. The writing of many books is endless." And as smart as Solomon was, he had no concept of the information flow that exists today. There are so many books and so much information out there that we can just waste our time, I think, as Solomon is trying to tell us. Excessive devotion to books is weary to the body. Don't focus on the things of the world, I believe he's telling us, but focus on the things that will drive us in the right direction and that will hammer it home so that it will come permanent. But let's begin it not when we're old, but in our youth. And then he summarizes it all in verse 13. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is what? Fear God and keep His commandments, because it applies to every person, whether you're young, middle age, or old, whether you live in this country or someplace else, it applies to every person. And you know, this big idea is not just in Ecclesiastes, but if we begin to look at the other books of wisdom, Job, in Job 28 and 28, behold the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. Or in Psalm 111:10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You see that theme, that big idea coming over and over again in these books of wisdom. Or in Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Wisdom teaches us two very important things. Number one, to fear God. And number two, to keep His commandments. And then in the final verse of chapter 12, he says, for God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. And the comfort is found in passages like Psalms 32, 1 and 2. How blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. How blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. Remember your Creator in your youth, because those habits that you develop in your youth will serve you well as you grow old and you begin to develop all those aches and pains and ills of old age as you begin to move towards the grave. Think about the things that we've talked about tonight. They have been mostly for the young folks, but I think it applies to all of us to realize that here was a man that one could say had just about everything that you could possibly want. Probably he had more than he should have had, particularly when you think in terms of 700 wives. I don't know about you other fellows out there, but it's tough enough sometimes with one. And I don't know how he handled 699 more. But setting that aside, the point that he's making in all of this is he experienced a lot. He's trying to share his wisdom with us to guide us to remember the Lord when we're young and develop our habits as we go forward. If there's someone here this evening who needs help in coming to the Lord, we would very much like to talk with you, or if you realize that you know what you need to do to come into His kingdom, or if you're one of His children that has wandered and you want to be brought back into the fold, would you come now as we stand and sing the psalm?